SimpFi is becoming a thing. I know you're going to educate me and tell me what a simp actually is. And if I am one, because I don't know, David. Hey, Bankless Nation, happy third week of January. David, what time is it?
Oh, it's the Friday Bankless Weekly Roll-Up, Ryan, where we roll up the entire week in crypto, which is always an ambitious endeavor. Yet, nonetheless, we persist onwards through the gamut, the dark force that is crypto, unpacking it and distilling it and summarizing a full entire week in crypto every single Friday morning. So grab your coffee, because we're going to get after it starting right now.
On the journey west, on the road to Mount Doom, throwing the ring of fire away.
Oh, God,
that's doing helpful. Guys, topics this week, Facebook and Instagram adding NFTs. We thought they'd do it. Every social media platform joining the NFT army. Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard for $69 billion. I don't know if that's a mean number, David, or... Okay. Olympus has fallen. The story of Olympus DAO and OHM price crash. We're going to dig into that. Also, USDC finally flippened Tether. We've been predicting that for like 2 or 3 years. It's finally happening, so it's good to see. SimpFi is becoming a thing. Okay,
SimpFi.
We're going to talk about the story of Irene DAO. That happened last weekend. I was barely paying attention, but I know you're going to educate me and tell me what a simp actually is. And if I am one, because I don't know, David.
Ryan? You don't know what a simp is?
I kind of do. Okay. I know what a simp is, okay? But I still want to hear you tell me what it is.
I think you might just be saying that.
Guys, this is going to be a lot of fun. Hope you're hanging with us. Before we get into the markets, we should talk about IRAs, okay? Specifically, Alto IRA. My big question is, do you have a crypto IRA?
Do you?
All right, this is a crypto dad question. Do you, David? You should. I've had one of these ever since I got into crypto. I know. You need to get one right now.
Do.
This is
I
like
need to get one.
Okay, this is my message. This is my pitch for David. Okay. It's not for anyone else listening to Bankless.
We're doing it live.
First of all, it's super easy. Okay, but here's why I love IRAs, 401ks. It's because it's the only way to do crypto with none of the taxes, okay? So every time you make a trade, you have to, if there's a capital gains tax, or let's say you start staking, all right? Like the income you received, you pay taxes as income on that. Inside of a crypto IRA, you don't have to pay taxes, all right, David? Now, the flip side is you can't touch the money without a penalty until you're older, but like you could just set aside $6,000 in something called a Roth IRA this year. It's all in crypto. You can set it up in like a few minutes. This Alto IRA solution is kind of an easy button for that. So it's already integrated with Coinbase. You have a Coinbase account. It's as easy as that. And you never have to pay taxes on the thing.
Wait, you also have to pay taxes on crypto?
Sir, yes. Okay. Now I'm getting worried about you. In your regular accounts, you do. Also, this is kind of the advanced button here. But if you have a 401k from a previous employer, you know, that's been collecting, you've had it in stocks for a while, you can convert that, roll that over into an IRA 401k type format with Alto as well. So if you want to go all in crypto with your retirement accounts, you know, you're skewing younger, you're going to use this money for a while, you want to buy and hold, this is the way to do it. And Alto IRA has the easy button. They're integrated with Coinbase, 125 different assets. So the things that are trading on Coinbase are the things you can invest in with this. Minimums of $10 with Alto IRA as well. So you can get started small.
So
did I convince you?
Yeah. Well, I've been convinced by your presence a while ago, but when I got into crypto, I started with mining. I did not know that you had to pay taxes in crypto. That is a true thing.
Yes.
In 2017 and 2018. I just did not know that. So for those of you who are not paying attention to our taxes, let me tell you, you want to get started on that basically as soon as possible. Just think of yourself as an employee of your future self and do your future self, your future boss self, a favor and get your taxes in order now, because if you don't, it just gets worse.
It does. Yeah. Well, David may be speaking from experience there, but you're all taken care of now,
yes,
right? You figure it out. In this account, though, you don't have to worry about any of that. And that's a reason to open it up while you're thinking about your taxes. So go to altoira.com/bankless. You can find out more about that. Okay, David, let's talk about the charts. Market time. Bitcoin, what are we at in the week?
Happy day today, flat week on the week. We started the week at $44,000, hit a low of $41,500. And we have, since starting to this recording today on Thursday, we have climbed up to back above $43,000, but still just down 1% on the week. So a very marginally down week after a big oof week last week.
Let's look at the 1 month. Okay, we're still down, obviously, yeah, in the bad 1 month. Hasn't Ooh, been a good
3 month isn't
going to
look
year.
Good either, Ryan.
I don't
Keep on
it.
Zooming
Should
out.
Ooh,
how that's about bad.
Year to date. Ooh, also bad.
Yeah,
year
to date bad.
1 year?
Wow. Well, wait, okay, yeah, that's because year to date is January. I forgot about that.
I can't believe this. So on the 1 year mm-hmm. time horizon, Bitcoin kind of looks like a crab, doesn't it?
It was a big crab year. Slightly up though. Started the year 1 year time frame started at $35,000 and we are currently at $43,000.
Kind of disappointing Bitcoin though. That's interesting. Yeah. Let's talk about ETH now. What's ETH on the week first?
Yeah, Ether down on the week, down 3% on the week, a little bit more down than Bitcoin. Started the week at $3,400, excuse me. Hit a low of like roughly $3,050-ish. And it has since resurged back up to $3,220, down 3%.
Let's do the same thing. 1 month. Down.
Oof.
3 months.
Oof.
Also big down. Oof. Year to date. We'll skip that. But the 1 year.
Ooh, up. Looking good. Really, really good. Yeah. So like roughly $1,200 1 year ago and currently at $3,200. Just since November, just bad feels.
Okay. What's interesting about this cycle is it's not playing out like previous cycles, is it?
Yeah.
It's a little bit different. Uh-huh. This is its own thing. I think in crypto, we've been trained to expect like a complete 4 year cycles and sort of we're doing the same thing in 2017, 2018, but this is playing out much differently. How do you think it plays out overall? Where do you think it's going?
The way that everyone is confused and we keep on talking about it every single week, the maximum confusion is how it plays out.
It's just unpredictable.
Unpredictable.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. But no more 4 year cycles. I never really was convinced that these 4 year cycles were dependent on the Bitcoin halving. The Bitcoiners will definitely tell you that the 4 year crypto cycles had to do with the Bitcoin halving. I think there's plenty of rationale to say that that was a coincidence. I think I talked about this last week.
But isn't that just because like, Bitcoin percentage of total market cap in crypto used to be so much higher. I mean, there was a time where it was 95%,
yes.
Right? Now
but
it's
even,
down into the 30s.
I would even claim that Bitcoin going up in price had less to do with the timing of the halvenings. But I'm not deep in the weeds on Bitcoin on that one.
Okay, we don't know the cycles. Just buy and hold for the long run. You don't have to worry about the cycles. Let's look at the ETH Bitcoin chart here.
Mm-hmm. Slightly down on the week. We started last week at 0.076. We are down to 0.075. I would really like that 0.08 number, but I'm not really going to complain too much about 0.075 either.
We'll see what happens. Like the big catalyst for Ether this year is the merge, right? Mm-hmm. Bitcoin doesn't really have any catalyst this year. So I would expect this to change.
Bitcoin has zero catalyst.
Change, right?
Ever.
It doesn't. I mean, next halving is
the deal.
Next halving is 2 years away still? 2024?
Yes. Yes.
I think.
Yeah.
I guess mm-hmm. that's the next big event that happens from a supply mm-hmm. Perspective. All right. The BED index, Bitcoin, ETH, and DeFi. What are we looking at on the week?
Down, I think, 0.5% on the week. Start of the week at $128. We are currently down to $123. So down 0.5%-ish, give or take.
There you go. Down 0.5%. Doing the crab thing. A little down on the year for sure. David, let's talk about this. Mm-hmm. Josh Stark wrote a blog post with Evan Van Ness, and they write this every year. I've read it every year since as far back as I can remember in Ethereum. And it's entitled The Year in Ethereum 2021. So this is sort of a summation of some big things that happened on the Ethereum network. And I want to draw a few of these out. The first is this. Look at this, David. Total
wow.
transaction fees 2021. You want to read this out? What are we looking at?
Yeah. In billions of dollars, $9.9 billion in transaction fees in 2021 out of the Ethereum network. Clocking in at second is Bitcoin at just over $1 billion. So Ethereum doing 10x the transactional volume, implying that there is 10x the demand to buy Ethereum block space throughout 2021, followed by after Bitcoin, Bitcoin's $1 billion fees in revenue in 2021, followed by Binance Smart Chain clocking in at $0.9 billion. And then after that, we have Avalanche at $0.04 billion and Solana at $0.026 billion and Cardano at $0.008 billion. That's where the demand is.
That's transaction fees. You can look at another view of it by 2021 where you bring in all the DeFi apps. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that Ethereum's number one in transaction fees. Uniswap is actually number two. It mm-hmm. even beats out Bitcoin. So an app on Ethereum is larger. But this was really cool to me when you start to compare this with traditional finance and you look at how many fees, the revenues of Visa last year, which were $24 billion. That's the revenue of Visa. And Ethereum was $9.9 billion, okay? And it finishes out ahead of Stripe, which was $7.4 billion. So Ethereum now doing more transaction fees and revenue than Stripe, and it's creeping up on Visa as well. Another way to view this is total transaction volume, mm-hmm. okay? So this is the amount of value settled on the Ethereum network. Ethereum actually surpassed Visa in 2021. So it settled $11.6 trillion. This is, of course, all of the ETH that gets transferred from address to address. This is also all the stablecoins, all the ERC-20s. If you add up all of that value, all the tokens, everything, if you add that up and compare that to Visa, the Ethereum network is now settling more value than Visa. And that's quite astounding to me. It's like, can you believe that we're actually surpassing Visa on that? On that metric.
Yeah, it's a great benchmark. And it's one of those benchmarks where like, okay, that's just like normal. And like, because Ethereum should be like 10x, because Visa is just one company, right? There's just one payments network. Ethereum is a payment network of payment networks, right? This is now where the game finally starts, in my opinion. And like, it wasn't to get to this point. Like, this is where we go from here is really the starting pistol here.
What's the market cap of Visa? I think like last time I checked is like 400 million, 400 billion or 500 billion or something like that. So comparable to Ethereum in terms of market
billion.
Cap. 450 billion. What's ETH hanging out around
about
that
the
range
same.
Too, right?
About the same.
About
yeah.
the same. Mm-hmm. And then Ethereum surpassing Visa and also just growing right. So much faster with so much more potential. And, right.
and
yeah,
that's just transactional volume, which is to say nothing about Ether as a bond or Ether as collateral. Like that's just payment volume.
It's funny. We talk about the flippening and we often mean like obviously Ether flippening Bitcoin. Right. But like at some level, I'm more excited about stuff like this. Like right. We just flipping Visa last
yeah.
year.
Can we flip the world, please? Speaking of flippenings,
what's this flippening?
USDC versus Tether supply. Tether, the king stablecoin that has been around forever, the first real stablecoin that got real adoption, finally gets flipped by USDC. I feel like there was a number of predictions by this throughout 2019, throughout 2020, throughout 2021.
Tether was going to die. Do you remember this?
Finally took 2022 for something to dethrone Tether as the leading supply of stablecoin, which is to say nothing about how massive Tether is. Tether's also going up in supply. It's just gotten outpaced by USDC. There is now over 40 billion USDC in existence, and there is only just under 40 billion Tether. And so congratulations to Circle. Congratulations to USDC for having that stablecoin supply. You'll love to see it. And this is just what happens when like stablecoins, like asset dollar-backed stablecoins have to play nice with nation states. Tether did not play nice with nation states. USDC did play nice with nation states. So like no surprise to see all the tailwinds being captured by USDC.
Yeah, Tether's always been sort of a mystery box. Like, we're not really sure what it's backed by, and USDC is more, you know, traditionally regulated, and you kind of need to be when you're backed by dollars in a bank account somewhere, or hopefully you are. What's this metric? This is from Ryan Watkins. It's comparing Uniswap versus Curve. What are we looking at here, David?
Yeah, we're looking at like market share of stablecoin volumes between Uniswap versus Curve. And what we are seeing is Uniswap V3 really starting to eat into Curve's market share. So more and more volume of stablecoin going into Uniswap. I was actually hanging out with someone last night who actually kind of had a critique on this chart, saying that there was a significant amount of volume being missed out of this chart. So this might actually not be accurate. And
like curve volume missed, or curve, just overall
that a
volume?
Lot of curve volume just that just wasn't included. I don't know what's true, but I'm going to find out, Ryan, on next week's show that we're doing, called The Curve Wars, where we're bringing a curve expert on to talk all about curve, and I will verify this data with him as to whether it is accurate or not. But if it is accurate, then Uniswap V3 really eating. Either way, Uniswap V3 stablecoin volume is going up through the roof. It's just a matter of like maybe curve's also doing that too. There's also a
story, I think, about the fee market here. So part of the volume rise on Uniswap for stablecoins is, of course, the release of Uniswap V3, but also 2 months ago, it just introduced a 1 basis point fee tier. It had previously been a lot higher. So who benefits from the curve and Uniswap wars? The consumer. Lower transaction fees. That's a beautiful thing. Let's talk about this, David. So this is Olympus has fallen.
Olympus has fallen, yeah.
Slide continues. So this is a headline in The Block. OHM market cap is down nearly 80% from its all-time high. 80% down. That feels like a pretty steep decline.
A big oof decline. That's a big oof is what we call that. So
okay. Well, what's going on? Why? What's happening?
Well, just for context, for reference, the market cap of Olympus Dow peaked on November 23rd at $4.3 billion. It is currently at $1 billion. So we've lost 75 to 80% of the total volume. And what happened? Well, I mean, at the end of the day, what happened is people sold. Like, people sold and number went down. And one of the reasons why it went down so much was because I think a very rational theory, and this is got pulled apart by Cyrus Younessi in his great tweet thread. One of the reasons why it went down so much was because it went up so much. And one of the reasons why it went up so much is because of this meme out of Olympus Dow, the 3-3 meme, which is a reference to a game theory outcomes matrix. And so you have possible actions that two people can take, and this is like a prisoner's dilemma, basically all theories and game theory is an extrapolation of the prisoner's dilemma. So you can stake your ohm, you can bond your ohm, or you can sell your ohm. And if you sell your ohm, that's like a negative number. If you stake your ohm, that's a positive number. So they're given like arbitrary outputs, and the goal is to convince everyone to stake their ohm instead of selling it, because if everyone stakes their ohm, then number goes up. And so there was this culture instilled out of Olympus Dow to put the three comma three thing in your Twitter profile, talk about how like we're all going to stake, like no one's going to sell, we're all going to stake together. And that's what made the token price go up. And I mean, sure, yeah, when you convince you and all your friends to stake and also instill a staking culture, like, well, then there's no one selling. And so number goes up. The problem with that is that people, and so a lot of like OMIs are what they called, got really, really wealthy because the price went absolutely bonkers. Just a year ago, the price of OHM was, or the market cap of OHM was $50 million in June of 2021 before it goes to $4 billion in November. And that's because this meme worked. Everyone was like, yo, if we all stake OHM, we're all gonna get rich. The problem is, you can only be rich on paper like that. You can't actually be real rich because there isn't actually a long-term buying pressure because it's mostly just a meme. And so what happened is like at some point, this is what a Ponzi game is. It's not a Ponzi scheme. It's a Ponzi game. But there's this culture of buying and not selling. And at some point that runs out. At some point, people want to take paper gains into real gains, and then the culture of staking turns into a culture of selling, and then we go from where it was to where it is. The reason, and so there was a bunch of like marketing around OHM about how it's like this grand new central bank design, and Cyrus Younessi put a tweet thread together that really explained it in different terms, where it's mostly just OHM, the Olympus Dow model is mostly just a hedge fund. You put assets into the fund, they get yield on it. The value of the assets in the treasury goes up, but the value of the market cap of the OHM token far, far out exceeded the market cap of the value of the assets in the treasury. So it was like a kind of a fractional reserve bank because like it was like a I don't know what the ratio was. It was like 5-1 or 10-1 of value of the ohm, which is a share of the treasury versus the actual value of the treasury. And so at some point, like the culture of staking just ran its course and people turned from stakers to sellers. And now the value of the ohm token is falling more closely in line with the actual reserves in the ohm treasury, more closely moving to a 1-1 ratio, kind of, which is where you would expect an efficient market to land anyways. So that's my summary of what's happened.
Yeah, so like I guess I don't understand why people are so surprised at this. Mm-hmm. is what I would say, is because basically the way I break down what you just said and the way I break down ohm is like there is some reserve asset that's backing this. So it's a mix of dollars and ETH, right? And call that the threshold value, kind of the utility value.
Also LP and then tokens ohm, that are getting yield.
Exactly. And then ohm is trading far above the reserve asset value or the book value, you might call it. And all of the rest of that value that's above the book value or the reserve value, that's all like, maybe you call that monetary premium, or maybe in the early stages of things, you just call that meme premium,
Meme premium.
Let's be fair. That has a real effect.
Totally.
Okay. Because like Bitcoin, the value of Bitcoin is 100% meme premium. Okay. A decent chunk of Ether's value is also meme premium. Yeah. And there is the potential that you can bootstrap that meme premium, actually turn it into monetary premium, if you convince enough people that the thing you have is money. And this was the path that Ohm has been down, which is saying, hey, this is a new approach to money. Just like Ether, just like Bitcoin, we've got an approach, it's called Ohm, and this can be a global reserve money. This can be a central bank, has been the comparison, okay? Well, from time to time, that theory gets tested. Just like Bitcoin's been off 80%. Mm-hmm. It's been off 90%, right? It's been through the fires of people saying Bitcoin's dead. The monetary premium evaporates in Bitcoin. Many of these bear cycles, that has been the case. Now it's happening to Ohm. And so long-term, is Ohm a money or not? Well, you have to come to your own conclusion. If it is a money, it deserves some monetary premium. If it isn't, then it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And the market is in the process of figuring this out. What I don't understand is why people are so surprised, right? Because right. Like, I thought you knew the game we're playing, guys, right? This is, as you said, like Bitcoin and like Ether to some level, this is a Ponzi game. It's not a scheme.
It's not a scheme.
Because no one can rug pull you. It's fully transparent. Mm-hmm. You can actually see everything that's backing Ohm. No one has rug pulled anyone else. But that delta that you're playing with, like that, you know, that pyramid game, if like if we all hold together, then we're good. But if we all sell together, we're going down. That prisoner's dilemma, that can quite easily happen. And this is just a case of that happening. I don't think it's the end of Ohm at all. I don't think it's the end of the mechanic of Ohm, the way it works, right? And this whole protocol-owned liquidity trend, I think that's totally here to stay. But it'll have to rebuild. And it might rebuild with a new set of narratives. I'm not sure, or maybe they'll try another round at becoming a money. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's not dead either.
And exactly, there's a reason why Ohm, the Olympus DAO model, got forked like 1,000 times. There's like 1,000 forks out there because the model works.
It's cool.
It's just like it just got out over its ski tips with the whole like staking culture, the 3-3 culture, and now we're back down to reality. There's a big fat reality check. A lot of people lost a lot of money. Sad. Sorry about that. Me too, by the way. I was in Ohm. But I'm not complaining, because like that's what you get when you're playing the game. This is one of those things where like this was Ohm's first big run up in price and then like kind of collapse back down to reality after it got forked a bajillion times. And like to me, that kind of feels like the first time where Bitcoin had its proof of work fair launch fork phenomenon, where Bitcoin got forked 1,000 times, then it pumped and had its first crash, and then it went back down to reality, and then it had a bear market for 4 years, and then it came back. So like the next story for Ohm is, does it come back? And no one knows the answer to that question. But if you think it comes back, like it's at a much lower price now. This is where does Olympus DAO have a community of people that are convicted on it, not just trying to do the whole 3-3 thing?
It's all about the community. It's all about the community of holders. And also the question is, will it keep falling? Because it could continue to fall. I don't think it's quite at its reserve price right now. I haven't looked into this, but I think it still could go a ways. eating eroding into that monetary premium. So do you want to play the game now, David? Yeah. Right? That's a question.
I kind of want to play the game.
Well, that's the game we're playing here. Let's talk about looks, playing a different game, playing the NFT marketplace game, Vampire Attack, OpenSea. We just talked about that last week. It's just a baby, man. It's like a week old, and it's doing things. So let's look at the price.
Crushing it in price.
Wow.
Yeah, it's starting to accelerate to a point where I'm a little bit nervous about its acceleration.
Why do you think it's accelerating? What's happening here?
Well, there is a decent amount of volume going through Lux. And so there's a lot of NFT trading happening on the Lux platform because of this token and this token that's going up in price. They are paying for trades, basically. So if you trade your NFTs, you get Lux token rewards. And as that token goes up in price, like, you have more and more incentive to trade NFTs on Lux. They're paying you to trade. So there's a lot of wash trading that's happening. So kind of like in the same way that like yield farming was just like the same people like leveraging up their yields, and like it wasn't really true TVL because of the incentivized bootstrapping, but that's what happens with a token. And so we have two graphs here. Let's go back up to the first one that you already showed. Like, Lux Rare is killing, crushing OpenSea in terms of volume. And that's, again, that's because of the token incentives. But then if you go down to the second chart, the actually number of users versus OpenSea is like just nothing. Like, it's, I think OpenSea's got maybe 20x the number of users. But the token is pumping in price because of all this wash trading that's happening, because people want to get the tokens. Lux, the thing I really, really, really like about the Lux platform is that it sends Ether towards the token owners. And so I've been staking my airdrop that I got, and I've gotten like half an Ether off of my airdrop just by staking it.
And that Ether is coming from transaction fees.
Right.
So in OpenSea's case, it takes what?
2.5%.
2.5%. In Lux's case, it takes 2%. Mm-hmm. But the Lux platform is sharing that 2% with those who stake Lux token, whereas OpenSea is keeping it as part of its revenue, part of its traditional business model.
Exactly, giving it back towards the token owners. And I've always, like, when I've had my thesis is that I want as much ETH as possible, but I will also sell my ETH for tokens that pay me in
that
ETH.
Give you more ETH?
That give me more ETH. And and that has always been my game plan for ERC-20 token investment. And this is the first token that is actually spewing out ETH. Like, it's kind of hard not to...
It's real cash flows. Mm-hmm. Now, you could say that that is going to evaporate once the token incentives, but it's still real ETH. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a real business model, tokenized business model. The interesting question, I think, or the question that's in front of the space is, OpenSea, of course, didn't go this route. And we've talked to Devin Finster on the podcast about why they didn't go this route. Part of the unspoken reason is the SEC, okay? That's why we don't get token airdrops in the US. That's why many of these companies are not tokenizing earlier in the process. And so they're keeping it private. There's probably other reasons for that. But the big question is, does this push OpenSea or force their hand into doing something for its users? Releasing a token, maybe? Doing something else? I don't know. That's what happened with Uniswap. But Uniswap was, of course, in a much different state.
Right. Uniswap is straight up DeFi, where OpenSea's it's a little hybrid.
Exactly. So what do you think? What odds do you give that of when Uniswap token?
I actually have a lot of thoughts about this, and I actually think we should take the time to unpack that. OpenSea is not going to do a token. It's not going to happen.
Are you certain about that? What kind of?
I don't have insider information. I have body language and cues that I have picked up on. So nothing concrete. But here's my rationale. There are zero OpenSea investors that are disappointed currently in its current state. There are zero OpenSea founders and employees that are disappointed with OpenSea in its current state. OpenSea is a perfect success for everyone involved. And they also have the eye of Sauron on them. The SEC is looking at them. All the regulators are looking at them. The world is looking at OpenSea because OpenSea represents NFTs. And so they cannot do a token because that's going to be legally and compliantly dubious, and they represent us. And so they have to be sparkly clean, and they need to bend the knee to the nation state and say, yes, we are a public company. We're going to be regulated by you guys. We're going to play nice. And that is that they are doing that to protect the whole entire industry by not doing something like SEC securities dubiousness and create some sort of like, imagine how bad that would be if OpenSea, the thing that basically represents all of NFTs, has to go to court with the SEC. We don't want that for the industry. And
so they have to play the role of Coinbase, right?
Yes, they have to play the role
of
Coinbase.
Which opens the opportunity for a Binance,
yes,
who's a bit more fast and loose. Which is maybe what Lux is. They're the Binance to, you know, OpenSea's Coinbase.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so I tip of the hat to OpenSea. They've gotten a ton of flack from users lately just about being out of touch with what the users want. And they're not. They know exactly. They're very in tune with what the users want. They are just hamstrung by compliance, by regulation, as we have seen 1,000 times before. Coinbase is the same thing. They grew really, really big, really, really quickly, as did the industry. And now their number one goal is to not F anything up. And I thank them for that strategy. I think it's the right and responsible strategy. And also that leaves room for things like Lux tokens.
Which, it's all good.
It's all good. It's great. It's just like, we have like rough spots, but like, they're leaving the door open for a truly decentralized, truly protocolized version of an NFT marketplace. And I think that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, as do I. And, I'm glad we get to let both of these experiments play out in parallel.
Okay.
Let's move on. OpenSea is still crushing it in terms of their sales volume.
Yep.
So January 2022 is the highest sales volume month ever.
Ever.
This happened with Sushi and Uniswap too. Remember when Sushi came on the scene, Uniswap's volume spiked. So it was like, Sushi actually helped Uniswap achieve more value rather than sucking it away. Let's keep moving. One other thing with OpenSea actually this week,
lots of OpenSea stuff.
Maybe we'll talk a little bit about is Dharma was just acquired by OpenSea. So Dharma is a DeFi smart contract wallet. It's a great way to get onboarded. They were just acquired by OpenSea. What do you think the reason for this acquisition is? Now, by the way, we predict, obviously, like OpenSea has raised so much money. Their last raise a month ago, 2 months ago, David, was this $300 million.
Right.
Okay, the numbers are getting so large, I can't remember.
Yeah.
They can't hire enough. They don't need $330 million worth of employees. So of course, what are they going to do? They're going to start acquiring. This was their first acquisition. Why do you think they acquired Dharma?
Fiat on ramps. That's why.
Fiat on ramps.
Right. They want to use Dharma to allow users to just buy directly through Dharma, whatever they've got, without having to have maybe a custodial wallet or non-custodial wallet, just an easier on ramp to buying NFTs. That's why they're doing it.
I have a kind of mixed feel. I think that's probably right. And of course, they have to compete against Coinbase, who's launching their NFT marketplace fairly soon. Coinbase already has fiat on-ramps totally locked down. I'm personally a little bit disappointed from a Dharma perspective, because I really like their smart contract wallet. And they're basically kind of shutting it down, right? So if you are a Dharma user, they're giving you like 30 days to move your funds out. Now, I think they're helping with the migration process. I think their support team is handling this as best they can, but it is at the same time, it's pretty disappointing that we lose a stellar DeFi wallet in the space, but maybe it gets rebirthed in OpenSea in some way that's actually better for users. So I'm also, I guess, preserving the benefit of the doubt and seeing what happens with that integration. Anyway, OpenSea making big moves. This wallet acquisition is yet another one. This industry is getting really interesting.
Yeah, and also congratulations to the Dharma team, because they have been grinding since as long as I can remember.
Totally.
For those that don't know, Dharma has gone through a number of pivots. Dharma used...
Do you remember when they were a peer-to-peer loan platform?
A peer-to-peer lending platform, like Compound, but instead of user-to-contract, like how Compound is user-to-user. And so you would be individually matched and set your individual rates with your assets, and you would generate like individual agreements with individual people about like loans, which was just like, way too much, like way too laborious. It was like a little bit skeuomorphic. They totally got just like Compound was the actual successful model. And so then they pivoted into being a yield application, getting yield on top of Compound. And then they pivoted into via on-ramps straight into L2s, which is great. We're connecting to your bank account, which is fantastic.
DeFi wallet.
DeFi wallet. And then, boom, they get acquired by OpenSea. So Nadav, has this the CEO of Dharma, has
become
been
the CTO, right?
Is now going to be the CTO of OpenSea. So maybe this is also an acqui-hire type thing. But like, congratulations, Nadav and Brendan from Dharma and all the Dharma team, because you guys have been grinding all the way through thick and thin, through the bear market. I'm glad you guys have landed in good hands. So congrats to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's a lesson too. I mean, you just keep heads down building. Something good will come of it eventually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Guys, we will be right back with some other releases of the week. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
So you've got some money, but how are you going to use it?
Shopping now, bro.
You want to spend when you know you should be saving.
You'll never buy a house at this rate.
But what if you could spend and save at the same time? For the enlightened kind with inquiring minds, a new world awaits. Set yourself free with completely flexible self-repaying loan technology. Supported on desktop and mobile, seize the power of Alchemix, allowing you to spend and save at the same time. Leverage your wealth without the risk of liquidation. Take out a loan that repays itself. By using yield from your deposit to pay off your balance, your only debt is time. What was once inconceivable is now within your grasp.
Are you winning some?
If you're going bankless, you need MetaMask. This is your tool to unlock the world of DeFi without giving up custody over your private keys. MetaMask is both a secure in-browser wallet and also a secure bridge for your hardware wallet. You can now trade tokens on any DEX or aggregator. MetaMask Swap gathers real-time pricing information across all the DeFi exchanges, allowing you to select your best price while getting all the MetaMask benefits of self-custody, lower gas costs, and increased transaction success rates. MetaMask also has a fantastic mobile wallet that I use when I'm out and about, which I use to collect POAPs, NFTs, and do all my DeFi things while I'm away from home. If you haven't downloaded MetaMask, you gotta try it out. Web3 wouldn't be the same without it. Download MetaMask for desktop and mobile at metamask.io and load up your Trezor, Ledger, Lattice, or Keystone hardware wallets so that they too can get into the world of Web3. Living a bankless life requires taking control of your own private keys. Not your keys, not your crypto. That's why so many in the bankless nation already have their Ledger hardware wallet. But the Ledger ecosystem is much more than just a secure hardware wallet. Ledger is the combination of the Ledger hardware wallet, the Ledger Live app, and soon, the CL Crypto Life card powered by Ledger. The CL card powered by Ledger is a crypto debit card with powerful features like an instant exchange to fiat, where crypto assets are only sold at the moment that you swipe your card, and also credit from crypto collateral, where you can collateralize your crypto assets in order to get a higher credit limit. You'll be able to manage your CL card powered by Ledger inside the Ledger Live app, right next to all the DeFi apps and services that you're already used to using, making the Ledger Live app your one-stop shop for all of your financial needs. Go to ledger.com, grab a Ledger, and download Ledger Live to get all of your DeFi applications all in one place.
Hey guys, we are back talking about the releases of the week. Let's start with this one. Polygon just released their own version of EIP 1559, this fee burning mechanism that's been so popular on Ethereum. What's happening here, David?
Yeah, so the Polygon network is congested. It's filled. That's what happens when like there's demand for stuff. And so they are implementing EIP 1559 to take advantage of in-demand block space. And so now the Matic token is getting burned as a function of the demand for block space on Polygon. And we know EIP 1559 has worked fantastically on Ethereum for many, many reasons. And why not just implement it on Polygon? So that's what's happening.
A much clearer link between the asset and the, I guess, the utility of block space, where previously that wasn't as clear. So you're kind of enshrining the asset and giving it a sacred place in the ecosystem. And that means as block space demand increases, then scarcity of Matic decreases, right? Which is a good thing, assumedly, for price. And that's the effect that it's having on Ethereum. I think all chains really will take a similar path. Like, this mechanism is just too good not to implement.
Yeah, no, it's universally an accepted mechanism. And interestingly, it was EIP 1559 was actually implemented on other chains before Ethereum was able to get to it, because Ethereum has moved a lot more cautiously and slowly. It's also an interesting note to just know that like L2s are going to get congested too. Like everything when you have supply, people are going to eat it up. L1s are going to get congested. We're already seeing Avalanche and Solana get congested. We're already seeing Polygon has been congested for a really long time. And so there's always going to be some sort of tension behind block space supply and block space demand. And while L2s are going to get congested, they'll still be cheaper. And the way that we solve for L2 congestion is just by like making more of them, which is great because we can have as many L2s as we want.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about some airdrops, David. This is really cool from Polymarket. So they just released, this is a prediction market. Of course, their Polymarket is based on Polygon. They're deployed there. But they just opened up prediction markets for OpenSea, MetaMask, Bored Apes, Zora, Phantom, a whole bunch more. And basically the question is, when are these platforms, when are these apps going to airdrop? All right. And so there could be a prediction market on this. If you look at MetaMask, there is now a 70% probability that, no, sorry, a 30% probability that MetaMask will drop a MetaMask token by March 31st. OpenSea, a 26% chance, okay? And this is according to prediction markets. Mm-hmm. So people are, you know, the market is betting in one direction or another. And again, this is a specific time interval from, you know, now until March 31st, 2022. So this is what the market is pricing the probability of these various airdrops at. And I think this is a great prediction market to have, especially for crypto, because everyone's curious. Like, what's the probability of an OpenSea drop? I just asked right. you, mm-hmm. and you said, like, you know, probably closer to zero, right? Close well, the zero, market yeah. is mm-hmm. sort of agreeing with you. It's only saying there's a 26% chance that there will be an OpenSea airdrop in the next few months.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. Are any of these standing out to you as, like, really good deals? I have my eyes on one.
Look at Dharma. That dropped all the way down, I'm
Dharma's
sure.
Down to
I'm sure this
zero.
Is a lot differently.
Yeah. The you, by you mean, the end of
what
March
do I think is mispriced?
Yeah, what do you think is mispriced? Yeah,
I think by the end of March,
MetaMask is. I'm gonna say that there's a 80% chance that MetaMask does a token, but by the end of March, really actually kind of
that's
throws,
what's throwing
that's
me.
Throws,
I feel like 80
off,
to
yeah.
90% this year, right? That yeah. MetaMask is going to do mm-hmm. a token, but yeah. I don't know this will happen this quarter. Mm-hmm. I think things just take more time. But look at this. Bored Ape Yacht Club,
right?
Definitely doing a
well,
token.
That's because
like. That's
I feel like we, there's it's, they
it's
know
pretty
that
much,
it's announced,
right? It's
like,
pretty
it's
much
known.
Coming, right? These markets are efficient yeah. in that way.
Okay.
Anyway, it's cool to have that as a resource. Yep. That's on Polymarket for you guys. I'll include a link to the show notes.
Oh God, here we go.
Fendi. Okay, Fendi is a brand, a purse brand.
I
you
guess.
Know, a luxury brand not, of some sort.
Not one that I okay. know.
They just released a tweet that says, "Powering the Web3 revolution with the Ledger." And they created like this odd looking keychain that you could strap to a purse.
It's a ledger carrying
else.
Case. It's a
to hold your ledger.
It's a flashy way to hold your ledger, and you can like hook it onto your bag or your coat.
Are
or
these
something.
People trying to get wrench attacked? Yeah. Like what? What is the advantage of flashing a ledger around?
Just well, I mean, it's just not, we're just accessorizing our crypto stuff. Like it's kind of crypto culture taking over. I mean, no one. Who's smart would actually take a real ledger and clip it to their like maybe they have just a burner ledger like I have ledgers that I don't use so I have like 50 of them so like maybe they're just trying to be flashy about their ledger but like you know actually before in 2015 2016 in the very very early days before Ether when Ether was trading around $5 to $6 I think at DevCon 1 or DevCon 0 like people were there like wearing their ledgers around their neck as like necklaces.
No, really?
Yeah, yeah. Just because like there wasn't, no one was rich. No one was rich yet. Like and it wasn't yeah. an issue. It's just like people
steal my $500.
Yeah. Right. It's like people needed like to just use assets just to like play with Ethereum. Right. It wasn't about like investment. It was just about playing. And then Ethermoon didn't like that culture went away really 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 fast. But this is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know what I think about that.
Why are we talking
funny.
About this? Let's move on.
I don't know. You know what you're getting for your birthday, though, next year.
Okay.
I got it now.
Here's,
I know
what,
it.
Here's what comes next. David Michal, we use a number of his websites on the weekly rollup. The crypto stats, crypto fees, L2 fees. We use his stuff all the time. He is starting up crypto stats. which is, I think, just perhaps like the culmination of all of his different segregated websites, his fee websites. And so he is trying to produce, him and the community that he's bootstrapping, is trying to produce a highly curated, highly accurate, normalized is the word that he's using, crypto stats, so that people like us can present on stats in a more like formalized manner. Like we can actually start to like have a standard for these things. And so he's curating people in a Discord. If you want to go join the Discord and help the crypto stats community, we'll get a link in the show notes to put that Discord there. Basically he wants to build out the Wikipedia for crypto data is what he says.
This is we've seen this on the rollups before. We love what they're doing, the tracking ETH burn, crypto fees, you know, how much transaction fees are, all of these things. This is cool too, David. So this is a new press release, got covered by Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. What is this?
Yeah, Walter Bloomberg in his famous all caps tweet says, Coinbase partners with Blockworks and Bankless, ooh, that's us, for DeFi and Metaverse event called Permissionless. And so, of course, you guys have heard about this before. Permissionless, happening May 17th to 19th in Palm Beach, Florida. This is where Ryan and I are going to be meeting for the first time. So that's going to be pretty cool because he decided to not go to ETH Denver. You got to get your tickets because tickets are up only. They are roughly in the $450-ish dollar range. They're going to go up in a couple weeks. They're going to go up a couple weeks after that. And they're going to go up to like $2,000+ by the time the event rolls around. So get your tickets now. Ryan and I are planning a Bankless and Beers satellite event where we will have beer and talk about stuff.
Miss.
Yeah, don't miss that.
That'll be awesome. Bankless together, all in one beer hall. It'll be a lot of fun. Also, the news here is partnering with Coinbase.
Yes. On this too. I forgot about Coinbase that. the actual announcement.
That's why we got Bloomberg. It wasn't because of Bankless data. Yeah. all right, let's talk about this. A16Z on the raises front. They just raised another $4.5 billion. Okay, A16, Chris Dixon. And company, of course, we've had him on the podcast a number of times. I'm sure they'll put that to good use in the Web3 world. This is another one. FTX, they just launched a $2 billion fund. This is with our friend Amy Wu, who's been on the podcast. Mm-hmm. This is dedicated, I believe, to kind of the metaverse, crypto gaming area. So $4.5 billion from A16Z, another $2 billion for FTX. There's another $100 million from Mechanism Games. They just launched a fund focused on play-to-earn gaming. I guess all this to say, massive amount of money VC money, private funding coming into the space, showing no signs of stopping. All of kind of the angel deals and VC deals, all of these things are red hot at the moment, and the money is flowing towards builders. Guess a good time to be building in the space. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What are your other takeaways from all of this?
There's just an infinite bid for games. Crypto games. And I really truly hope that we aren't just like cloning Axie Infinity and spinning out 50 different clones, like how those like stupid arcade games that we see just get repurposed over and over and over again in the Web 2 world. Yeah. I'm very, very happy that billions of dollars are being funneled into building cool new games, like bullish on just fun. Like that's
it's just a lot
of money, right? Like how much true innovation can there really be? You don't get to bootstrap meme innovation into existence with a bunch of money. There are going to be a bunch of games coming. We're going to be able to play a bunch of games.
That's the good side. Great to see this money flowing in the space. I am kind of a sucker for the bear market builders though. You know, like I feel like that's when the real work gets done. After all of the noise and the hype dies away, the people who remain and they're continuing to build. I mean, that's how Axie was built. It was a bear market story, bear market game. And they just soldiered through and a bunch of their peers died. They kept going. They built something great. So I'm still a sucker for the bear market, but it's also good to see all of this infrastructure being built out. That'll lead to good things too. Speaking of raises as well, last raise of the week, POAP just raised $10 million to accelerate their efforts. POAP badges, they are a thing. They are a cool thing. I know both of us collect many, have many of them.
Many.
So what do you think they'll be doing with this capital?
Oh, gosh, that's a really interesting question. Maybe we should get Patricio on to actually talk about it. They have a very long blog post about kind of their plans. But there was this one take that we had on the weekly roll-up a while ago about how POAPs are just digital tokens of memories. And so I'd like to see POAP kind of lean into that. Like, how do we more instantiate our real memories better? And so perhaps that's what they're going after, as well as just like allowing people to increase their digital footprint for airdrops. POAPs are a great way to farm airdrops if people ever use them for whatever reason, because you can just like know who's exactly in your community. But you know, community identifying is really huge. Who's actually, you know, of course, who's been where, doing what. I got my first POAP in East Denver 2019. I hold it very dear to my heart. I'm excited to get the 2021 one. It's coming up soon. Congratulations to Patricio because he's been grinding on POAPs ever since, always believed in it. And I'm also very, very honored. Ryan and I both are angel investors in this seed round. So we were part of this too.
This is cool. This is a tweet we read out on POAP not too long ago. I am my collection and my collection is me. We're right. The podcast coming out on Monday is really all about meaning in the metaverse. Mm-hmm. And I do think collecting things from various places you've been in the metaverse could be a key way to essentially find meaning, part of your digital identity in this new world of crypto. And POAPs are certainly part of that story. Speaking of digital identity.
Here we go.
Finding your way in crypto. Do you have a job yet?
Do you have a job?
Do you have a crypto job? Mm-hmm. That's what we mean.
Yeah.
You probably have a regular job,
right? Related to Ether and tokens and crypto and stuff like that.
You should have one. Mm-hmm. This could be the year. Guys, go to the Bankless job board. Check out some of the jobs. We'll just read a few out. Senior full stack engineer at Syndica, a data engineer at Paperchain, a senior technical writer on the Ethereum Foundation team. That's writing in Geth for the Geth client. Lead blockchain engineer, ThorSwap. There's a ton of others. We won't read them all, but go tune into bankless.palette.xyz/jobs. Sign up, get these jobs delivered right to you, and get a job in crypto.
Have you noticed how the list that Ryan has been reading out has gotten shorter and shorter and shorter? That's because we've gotten people jobs. So if you want to list your job, go to the jobs board and list your job, because we are good at placing people.
Yes, it works. Guys, let's talk about news now. Dave, you want to start with Ethereum stuff? And we talked about this last week, which was, mm-hmm. It was sort of airdrop season between Lux and this other token that was about to airdrop before we recorded, fees.wtf. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, they've really lived up to their name with WTF because, ooh, like,
spicy.
It's gone. It's been a strange airdrop, to say the least. Yeah. What's happened with this one?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just pat ourselves on the back, because last week, Ryan, we talked about two airdrops. One was Lux and the other one was WTF.fees. And between you and I, our consensus was that, like, okay, we're gonna hold the Lux airdrop because that's interesting, but we're going to sell the WTF.fees airdrop. And in hindsight, the Lux token has 2x'd and the fees.wtf airdrop was a complete mess. So we got that one right. There's they charged for the airdrop. They charged 0.01 ETH in order to register your address to get the airdrop. And once again, what the hell is the token even for in the first place?
WTF, guys.
Yeah, like, what the hell's going on? Anthony Sizzano had a quote in here that is just very emblematic of who he is. Such a blatant cash grab.
Look, if you have to pay anything other than gas fees for an airdrop, right. It's not an airdrop.
Right, yeah.
All right,
you're just selling tokens. That's not an airdrop. You're just selling
your ETH? You're essentially buying tokens with ETH. Right. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
A lot of other things went wrong with this. I have a confession to make, though, David. I actually didn't even take the time to claim this one.
I have not claimed mine either. I don't even know how much it's worth. I don't even know how much it's worth.
Yeah. Well,
and now I'm just like, well, I'm going to go check how much I can get. Like, if I can get something, maybe I will. But like, maybe I just don't do it out of protest. Like, this is dumb.
The other thing is like the claim button. I mean, you are giving some signing authority to whatever, you know, website is, you know, you use to claim your tokens. And so I'm a little bit sketched out by that, unless I know the reputation, the pedigree, like, do I even want to bother? That's another reason I didn't claim it. Other than that, I'm just lazy. And
meanwhile, right now, the Lux token just broke through $7. I might be a little bit overexposed here. I might have too much.
David's bullish Lux. Let's talk about blacklisting for a minute. This is a PSA from a few weeks ago, but I think the numbers were much smaller. This time, Tether just blacklisted $160 million worth of USDT. Okay, this is just another reminder. USDT, Tether, USDC as well. This is not censorship resistant money. Mm-hmm. These are tokenized representations of dollars in a bank account somewhere. USDC is basically like a bank, a U.S. bank, abiding by all of the U.S. banking regulations on crypto rails. This is not what we mean when we say free, uncensorable money. They're useful. They're a means to an end. But another reminder here with Tether blacklisting $160 million. And I got to ask, what do they do with this money?
Yeah, like who gets that money? Where does that go?
They should implement a burn mechanism. EIP 1559 for Tether and just like, you know, give it back to Tether holders.
Yeah, I mean, I guess does Tether just get to pocket this money?
That can't be how it works, right?
Well, how else does it work? Like, who gets the money?
I don't know. So they're freezing the representation of the tokens, right? Uh-huh. The money, of course, is still
in the vault,
and it's not actual dollars, just some portion that are dollars. Right. It's treasuries and bonds and other things that are backing this thing, but I don't know. It would be to Tether's benefit, I suppose.
There's
to freeze your funds.
$160 million worth of value that Tether no longer has an outstanding liability for, which makes it an asset. So, like, who gets the asset?
More questions, David.
I know a bunch of public goods that would love that money if anyone from Tether's listening.
Well, I mean, they took it from somebody.
Yeah.
So who's the person they took it from?
Well,
and
probably
why?
A scammer or this. Like somebody like doing like violating OFAC regulations or something.
Trust
like that.
Trust Tether.
Yeah.
You have to trust Tether.
Yeah.
And they can freeze anyone's account for any reason.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about this. Ethereum client diversity stats. Not doing so well.
Yes.
This is an area of improvement. First, let me say, amazing that Ethereum actually has more than one client.
Right.
No other chain has more than one client. So you're already batting ahead. Right. But like the expectations for Ethereum are so much higher. It has like 5-6 different clients for ETH2. And this is the proportion. 68% of the ETH2 clients staking ETH in the Beacon chain right now are doing so via Prism. Lighthouse, number two with 22%, Tecu, 9.5%, Nimbus, 0.3%. Ideally, you'd love to see, I think Danny Ryan's like, I'd love to see, I don't know, probably perfect world, 25%, 25%, 25%, 25%, something like this, or at least a third, a third, a third. No client having more than 33% of the network. That's not the case today.
Yeah, and just to emphasize why this is important, for example, if there was this quick history lesson. Here we go. The Shanghai DDoS attacks that happened in 2016. The reason there was one client, I think it was Geth, that got DDoSed and all Geth nodes stopped working. Ethereum stayed online because the parity nodes, the other client, took the weight of Ethereum.
Saved its ass.
The multi-client design saved Ethereum. And this is there's been inflation bugs in Bitcoin, and because Bitcoin only has one client, that turns into a catastrophic bug where you have to roll back the chain. Fun fact, Bitcoin has had the chain rollbacked, which is crazy because they yell at Ethereum for doing it for
way back in the day.
Yes.
But yes.
If a multi-client system is a decentralized, anti-fragile system, but Prism is such a good client that everyone is using Prism to stake. And so Prism has this outsized share. Just because they made a really good piece of software, they have an outsized share of the Ethereum to clients. And so there's this conversation happening in the Ethereum space about how do we get more people to stake not using Prism? And
it's a victim of its own success.
It's a victim of its own success.
Prism is just really good.
But the thing is, we have incentives baked into the Ethereum protocol, which I think is what you're about to pull up next.
The problem is these incentives are almost disincentives. So it's a bit more stick than carrot. But like,
yes,
yeah,
this is true.
What are these disincentives? What is the stick?
Right. Okay. So in the event of a client failure, if there's ever a bunch of nodes that all go down at the same time, slashing happens. And if everyone who's on Prism all goes down at the same time, everyone is getting slashed if there's a client failure. And because Prism is disproportionately a high portion of the clients, they get slashed disproportionately because we want to incentivize.
It's like amplified.
Yes, it's
amplified. It's like an amplification effect.
There's
happens.
Like a crowd penalty. Like, oh, are you staking with everyone else and everyone else went their nodes went down? Well, you should have been staking with like fewer people. Maybe you should have been staking on Lodestar or Nimbus where there isn't the amplification penalty. And so staking on Lodestar, you don't have any loss if there is a client-wide slashing event. And with Nimbus, which is the next most used client, like it's only a little bit by comparison. And so these are natural incentives to balance the resources of the Ethereum ecosystem to make sure that it stays decentralized over the long term. And this is just what good incentive mechanism design looks like. So if you are running a node on Prism, know that this risk to you exists because you are staking in the same exact way that everyone else is. And perhaps you should, you know, get out of the crowded room and go to the more empty room.
Yeah, I do think that this is sort of a PSA, right? And particularly for exchanges, would love to see more client diversity with the Coinbases and Krakens of the world doing this. So, you know, hopefully they are factoring these risks into the equation, because the risk amplification, if they're all using some of the top clients like a Prism or Tekio, right, is just drastic. It's going to cost a lot more money in the event of slashing. Of course, I feel like some of this conversation is a little premature too, because we haven't yet gotten to the merge. Okay. Everyone's ETH is still sort of locked in the beacon chain. So that's another catalyst that could shake things up and change it all around. I'm hopeful for that.
But there's a conversation about how if this like disproportionate weighting towards Prism actually might delay the merge, because it's unsafe to merge when there is a super majority of stake. So that is up in the air.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think it'll delay anything, but that is a conversation that I've seen. Let's talk about layer two, David.
Oh,
our favorite subject.
Oh, here we go.
It's 2022. Oh, yeah. Yep. Layer two time. All right. Get you going. Binance users are now able to deposit and withdraw ETH to and from Arbitrum. That's our fiat on ramp.
Love it.
Binance starting to support Arbitrum. And another victim of its own success.
They had to stop it. Like, do you know why they had to stop, Ryan?
No, this happened very quickly. Like in a few days, they just had it on and they turned it off.
Why they turned it off? The answer why they turned it off, because they ran out of ETH, because everyone withdrew to Arbitrum. And so they need to like get their ferry of ETH from the main name back to Arbitrum, so users of Binance can go from Binance to Arbitrum. It was so successful that Binance ran out of ETH on Arbitrum. Coinbase, Brian Armstrong, I know you're listening. Take note, like there's user demand to exit from exchanges onto layer twos. Please do it. Please do it.
Layer two, layer two, 2022.
Brian, I have your number. Don't make me text you. I will.
Optimism as well. They're getting an Aave implementation. So it looks like Aave is getting set to deploy on Optimism. Again, layer two is happening.
Aave
also on Arbitrum.
Yep. Love it.
Aave
everywhere.
On Optimism and Arbitrum right now. Aave coming to ZK Sync. What's happening in the Argent wallet.
Love it.
That just went live this week. Also, Optimism continuing to drive improvements. There's so much optimization. I'm optimistic Optimism optimizations. All right. They just shaved 30% off their average transaction fee this week. And there might be more coming.
This is not the 30% shaved off of transaction fees that we reported on last week. That was a different time. This is another 30% off of transaction fees off of Optimism. So an ERC-20 token transfer, or excuse me, an ETH transfer on our Optimism, almost below a dollar. And there is still plenty of room for even further fee reductions on layer
two. They're
so,
all competing with each other.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's so great.
Each other to drive down prices.
2222222.
Hot protocol. Yep. 1 billion in volume transferred. Mm-hmm. This is just 6 months after launching. People using bridges. Mm-hmm. How long will it take them to reach 100 billion is the question.
This year, 100%.
Definitely this year.
Also, definitely, if you haven't used the Hop Bridge before, go do it. Just farm the airdrop. Like, they don't have a token. They're going to release a token. How are they going to release a token is from people using the bridge. Go use the Hop Bridge. Go from Ethereum to Optimism. Go from Optimism to Arbitrum. Go do other things. And then, I don't know, just end up back on Ethereum. Just start farming these airdrops. Why aren't you doing this? Is Hop on
I'm
there?
Looking at the probability. It's
34%.
According to Polymarket, the probability this quarter is 34%. That Hop will release an airdrop.
I think they should really extend this out for the whole entire year. I don't know. I guess they need the markets to settle, but they should really extend the markets to a one-year time frame.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. But, you know, that's your probability this quarter, according to the prediction market. Let's go to NFT land, David. This is huge news. Absolutely monumental news. Facebook and Instagram adding NFT functionality. They want to help you create, that's minting, and sell NFTs. In addition to, of course, displaying your favorite NFTs. This is super big news from my perspective. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I'd like to know the details. I did not actually read this article. Apologies.
There's not much in the article. It's just more of a stub. Yeah. Like, because it links to a Financial Times article. It's kind of vague, but Meta's doing something. They're probably going to use their Novi wallet.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not certain that this is like going to happen on open blockchain systems. Like maybe it'll be part of the, you know, the Facebook blockchain or something like this. But from my perspective, this is still massive adoption,
right?
Massive surface area for NFTs.
Yeah, this kind of feels like a "Hey, we're doing stuff too" an announcement. In this article, you can see it. Instagram leader Adam Mosseri said in December that his social network was actively exploring NFTs. The technology is on the company's mind, at least. It sounds like they haven't completely settled with what they want to do. They just are telling the market that, like, "Yo, we're totally doing NFT stuff as soon as we figure out what that is."
Do you think they're also doing that thing where they're testing the waters? Like they let stuff leak?
Yeah, see if they're going to get canceled or not.
How the market responds. Yeah, something like this. And then
I keep on forgetting that people like to cancel people over NFTs. I forgot about that.
That's happening. Yeah, that's a thing. Right. Uh-huh. Irene Dow. That's been a thing over the weekend as well. What is this? What is going on? I've heard people refer to this as SimFi.
SimFi, yeah. So Irene is a individual. I don't know who she was before this, but she has made a bunch of NFTs of her in, like, you know, attractive attire and, you know, very, very pretty, and has made a bunch of NFTs, and she has made Irene DAO. So there's a Discord. And so, like, basically she's just targeting all the simps of the world to get her to buy her NFTs. The floor price is 1.4 ETH. Mike Novogratz bought one. A few other people have bought one. So, like, people are starting to buy these just because, like, it's kind of like a...
Do you have one?
I do not have... Ryan, please. Please, sir.
Not an Irene simp?
Not an Irene simp, no. I mean, I'm down to be a simp for someone, but I don't know who Irene is. I want to choose who I'm going to be a simp for.
Our show notes say would be fun for David to explain what a simp is to Ryan.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I didn't put this in there.
Right.
Must be Luke, our editor, put this in there.
Luke, okay. Ryan.
Okay, I know what a simp is, all right? I understand, Luke, what a simp is.
Actually, what is simp short for? Maybe I need to have what a simp is. what is simp? I'm Googling this right. What is simp short for? I won't be reading that out loud.
All right, well, that's what's going on. I don't know.
A simp is somebody who is basically like somebody that just like does anything and or everything for like a girl, right? Like, oh, like they're super interested in, like, oh,
it doesn't have to be a girl, does it?
I think so.
I mean, are we Ethereum simps?
Oh, we are.
Are we Vitalik simps?
Huge, huge Ethereum simps. That's exactly okay. Right. Yeah, but like it's supposed to be for like the opposite gender. Like, oh, I'll go get your coffee. I'll hold the door open for you. I'll cook you dinner. Like, I think like stuff like that. Yeah.
All right. Moving on. China is getting into the NFT scene. Okay. Bitcoin bad, NFTs good, as long as it's deployed on the national China blockchain network. That's what's going on. In which case, is it an NFT?
Right.
Per discussion last week, when we talked about the flow chain, it's just a JPEG. If you don't have
property rights,
it's just a JPEG. If your property rights are dependent on a nation state that can censor you, those are weak property rights. Right. I don't know. I think some people get worried when they see this about nation states co-opting NFTs and co-opting Web3. I don't personally, because of the protocol sync thesis, right? I think all of this ultimately has to collapse to the most credibly neutral decentralized layer at the very bottom. So this is just onboarding for open, permissionless chains, I think, I hope. But do you think that's a real threat? You think this gets co-opted by nation states?
At the end of the day, like, I don't really care too much about JPEGs getting co-opted by nation states, because you can still do stuff by, like, trading them. And, like, if all things get co-opted, like, JPEGs aren't really the worst.
But keep in mind, NFTs, like, they're starting as JPEGs, but, like, we believe they're going to be, like,
turn into
fundamental
identity.
Property in the metaverse, identity, all sorts of things.
I mean, it's not any more, like, centralized than China already was. So there's that.
There's that. Gap coming in the NFT world, releasing their first line of NFTs on the Tezos blockchain. So retailers joining the fray. What's this about?
I think that's it.
NFT Mania?
Gap NFT about on Tezos. End story.
You want to hear something weird, dystopian?
God, here we go.
Walmart is quietly preparing to enter the metaverse. The metaverse, the Walmart metaverse.
The Walmart.
How does that sound?
The metaverse we have at home.
Yes. This just sounds awful to me. The Walmart metaverse, but I guess they're filing trademarks.
That's the news. It's the most boomer way to get into the metaverse. They filed trademarks. That's the end of the story.
Someone tell them they don't actually have to file trademarks to build on the metaverse, please.
Okay, this is the big story. This is the big one.
I don't know why we buried this. This is the big one. What is this, David?
Microsoft buys Activision Blizzard, World of Warcraft, Diablo, StarCraft, that game studio, also Call of Duty. That is getting bought by Microsoft at something like 40% above the share price at the time when this was released.
$69 billion.
Nice. And so Microsoft getting into the metaverse via just an acquisition of a gaming company. I mean, Activision Blizzard hadn't even gotten into the metaverse yet. Whatever that even means, I don't even know. Microsoft wants to be into digital worlds and digital realms. And so maybe this is injecting metaverse type stuff into Activision Blizzard.
Yeah, at this valuation, this is more than a game purchase, it feels like, right? It's more strategic than that. This feels like more than just a game acquisition for kind of their Xbox platform, Microsoft, you know, game studios. This feels to me at this kind of premium is this is a play for the metaverse. This is a...
They are FOMOing into the metaverse.
Yeah, they're trying to chase after whatever Zuckerberg and crew are doing on the Meta side of things, on the Facebook side of things. But you think it means... you think this is going to be a trend this year?
Oh, yeah. This is my tweet. I said, blank public company enters the metaverse will be the headline of 2022. And then I followed that up with my ETH maxi take. Might as well read public company buys ETH because it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. To the extent it's going to be built on Ethereum. Coinbase partnering with MasterCard to let users buy NFT via cards. That sounds cool. What's happening?
Yeah, so Coinbase has their NFT platform, their to-be-released NFT platform. And fortunately, MasterCard has categorized NFTs as digital goods. So because of that, you can buy them with MasterCard. So making it compliant to buy crypto things. You can't buy like things like Bitcoin or Ether or cryptocurrencies with a credit card. That would be bad. Also irresponsible. But you can buy NFTs because MasterCard has classified them as digital goods. So cool. We can now buy NFTs with our MasterCard. And as soon as Coinbase opens up their NFT platform, we'll be able to do it there.
That's awesome. Breaking into mainstream, here's another story of that. So Budweiser just purchased, I believe, a Nouns NFT.
Out of NounDAO, yeah. Mm-hmm.
From NounsDAO. This is sort of the, I don't know, this has some of the pedigree and some of the valuations that rival CryptoPunks, right? I know it's not as mainstream. There are far fewer NounDAOs. Right. I believe one is released every day.
One
That's
noun
sort of how
per
it works.
Day. There's a bid on it. I think the bids are like 50 to 60 ETH per noun just because I don't know how they got that valuation so quickly, but they did. So great.
Right. So Budweiser doing it, obviously for some social cachet, for some street cred, for some brand awareness, for some coolness. And I believe are planning to incorporate nouns in a Super Bowl ad, right?
Yeah.
Like Budweiser dominating Super Bowl ads. This is IP for one of their ads. Super cool.
Whoever is in Budweiser, like advertising or leading Budweiser or Bud Light, it's actually Bud Light, which I think are the same thing. Whoever's doing that, like killer job, because they didn't do the very basic thing of just buying a Bored Ape. They went for a NounsDAO. That is some like deep NFT knowledge. Whoever's leading Bud Light, give that person a raise first off. And they're probably, they're probably a reader of Metaversal, I would say. I bet you they really read William Pieser stuff. I bet you they got to.
I mean, William Pieser is a big noun fan. So, maybe it's that. This is pretty obscure. This is pretty deep. This is pretty niche.
Right. This is a good move. This is a very strong indication. Like, we are actually cool. We are not just like the hey fellow kids.
Exactly. They're not just buying another Bored Ape, right? Yeah. This is deep crypto stuff.
This is real crypto
NFT
stuff.
Culture.
Yeah.
Well,
stuff.
Okay. So how many crypto commercials do you think we'll see at the Super Bowl? What's your guess?
At least two. At least two.
I'm going to go with five.
Oh, fuck. Wow.
I think it's going to be five. Like, and so I'm including something like this that's Budweiser that adds NounsDAO when I total five. But yeah, I think it's at least five.
Cool.
I think that's a low estimate. Cool.
Polymarket, let's get this up and running.
All right. This is cool too. Mm-hmm. So Rare, they just added Serena Williams to their board of advisors. So Rare, of course, is a... NFT trading card platform. It's really for soccer, really for football.
Fantasy football, right?
Fantasy football.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and it's built on top of layer two technology. Yeah. Super cool. Huge.
ZK rollup on Europe. Ethereum.
ZK rollup on Ethereum. Now Serena Williams jumping on the board. This is kind of a question. I think we'll see more athletes do this, more influencers do this, get into the NFT scene. I think she's really blazing a trail here, so that's cool. Or maybe we're just simping for Serena Williams. We wanted the podcast. That's why we mentioned this.
Well, I accidentally talk shit because Serena Williams recently put a Bored Ape as her profile picture.
Oops. Yeah. Whoopsies. Well, there goes that.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Some post-show editing here. Yeah. Last thing on the NFT category. What's this, David?
Solana NFT's total sale volume crosses $1 billion. Congrats to the Solana NFT ecosystem. I don't know, actually, what is like the OpenSea version of Solana? Like, where do you go to trade?
It's a whole different set of apps. Yeah. Like, it's a whole different world over there. Yeah. Although, I think OpenSea's going to... I mean, they're going to support cross-chain, multi-chain, L2. Yeah, so we'll see how long all of that lasts. Bitcoin world, just two quick things. The first is Jack just announced that Block, formerly known as Square, is officially building an open Bitcoin mining system. I feel like he already announced that, but maybe we're announcing it again. And also, the Cash app is integrating Lightning Network, letting US users send Bitcoin globally for free. Cash app of Block, formerly Square, going all in on Bitcoin. Still seems kind of weird that it's just Bitcoin.
Like, I'm glad
do Bitcoin, but like also do all of the other things.
Right.
I feel like maximalism holds people back a little bit. Dude. And any form of maximalism, okay? ETH maximalism, Bitcoin maximalism will hold you back in this space.
Bitcoin, innovating on Bitcoin miners is just not where it's at in 2022. Like, come on, Jack.
But also come on the podcast.
But also come on the podcast.
Last thing for you on the regulatory side of things. I guess this is more crypto banking side of things. There was a breach at crypto.com. Mm-hmm. At first, there were reports $15 million was stolen in this heist. Looks like it's closer to $33 million. The CEO of crypto.com confirmed this. Do you know what's going on here?
No, and neither do they. This is a quote from the article. It is not yet known how the hacker was able to steal the funds from crypto.com, but the exchange first announced that some users were reporting suspicious activities on their accounts on January 17th. At the time, the exchange stated that it was going to pause withdrawals while it was investigating the matter. And so, yeah, kind of big loss here, with over $30 million in collected BTC and ETH. The Ether on Ethereum got washed through Tornado Cash. Poof, it's gone. Amazing. sorry to crypto.com and anyone affected by this. My conspiracy is inside job.
Interesting. Yeah. Many of them are. Yeah. Not your keys, not your crypto. If you have funds parked in crypto.com. I think for this size of a hack, of course, everyone will be fine. Mm-hmm. Crypto.com is like printing money these days through all sorts of means. So it's going to be fine for this type of a hack. But you know, it's been a long time since we talked about a major exchange getting hacked. Can you imagine if like Coinbase was hacked, David? Mm-hmm. What a dark day that would be for crypto. We haven't talked about things like that.
Coinbase has actually gotten hacked very, very, very in their early days. And I think that's actually a good thing because they started to take security very, very seriously, very, very early, and they have not been hacked since. So I actually kind of think like I consider Coinbase as like basically never have gotten hacked before because like it almost doesn't count when they started in like 2011 or 2012 or something, 2013. Yeah. It's like they were just like the 3-person startup on like a laptop. And then boom, as soon as they got any sort of traction, like they have been fantastically secure ever since. Also, Gemini has not been hacked either. So congrats
to them.
It's
also good that we had Mt. Gox happen so early in crypto's history. Right. That just kind of shook many generations. But we're kind of far removed from that.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm not wishing anything bad. It's happening. It's just know if you have your funds in an exchange, that could be susceptible to something like this. Yep. Guys, we will be right back with the takes of the week and, of course, the meme of the week. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Polygon is Ethereum's largest and most vibrant scaling solution to date. With millions of monthly users and all of the biggest DeFi apps, the Polygon ecosystem has turned into a blossoming metropolis of DeFi activity. Transactions on Polygon are quick and cheap, allowing users the freedom to achieve their DeFi goals, all while being economically anchored to Ethereum. But Polygon isn't just the proof-of-stake sidechain. The Polygon team is building a suite of scaling solutions, including Polygon Hermes, Maiden, Nightfall, and Zero, all with different design choices in order to be optimized for all possible crypto use cases. If you're a developer who wants to build on the Polygon ecosystem, go to the link in the show notes to check out their fantastic documentation. And if you're a user who just wants to experience fast and cheap DeFi, you can bridge over your ETH or other tokens and start playing around with any of the thousands of applications that are available on Polygon. The Layer 2 era is upon us. Ethereum's Layer 2 ecosystem is growing every day, and we need L2 bridges to be fast and efficient in order to live a Layer 2 life. Across is the fastest and cheapest and most secure cross-chain bridge. With Across, you don't have to worry about the long wait times or high fees to get your assets back to the Layer 1. Assets are bridged and available for use almost instantaneously. Across's bridges are powered by UMA's Optimistic Oracle to securely transfer tokens from Layer 2 back to Ethereum. Across is critical ecosystem infrastructure, and ownership is being handed over to the community. You can be a part of this story of Across by joining the Discord and becoming a co-founder and helping to design the fair launch of Across. If you want to bridge your assets quickly and securely, go to across.to to bridge your assets between ETH, Optimism, Arbitrum, or Boba networks. Bankless is proud to be sponsored by Uniswap. Uniswap is a new paradigm in asset exchange infrastructure. Instead of a cumbersome order book system where trades are matched with other humans, Uniswap is an autonomous piece of software on Ethereum that lets you trade any token at the current market price. No human counterparties or centralized intermediaries, just autonomous code on Ethereum. Input the token you want to sell and receive the token you want to buy. The Uniswap Grants Program is accepting applications for grants. Do you have something of value that you think you want to contribute to the Uniswap ecosystem? No matter how big or small your idea is, you can apply for a unique grant at uniswapgrants.org and help steer Uniswap in the direction that you think it should go. Thank you, Uniswap, for sponsoring Bankless.
All right, guys, we are back with the takes of the week. The first is this, a property versus utility. And this is an image you're going to have to describe for podcast listeners. What are we looking at?
Yeah, so we have BTC and ETH side by side. BTC is a square representing a plot of land. And then next to it is Ether, also a square representing a plot of land. But on Ether square is a cube, indicating that you can build something on it. And I actually really just enjoy this visual metaphor.
It's very simple.
Remember when the few understand meme was proliferating around crypto Twitter? Do you remember how that came about, Ryan?
No, I was actually going to ask, did that come from DeFi circles or Bitcoiner circles?
That came from Bitcoiner circles. That came from Pierre Richard, who said that Bitcoin is real estate on the internet real estate. Implying like, yo, there's like, it's the native currency of the internet. There's only 21 million units. Therefore, it's like digital real estate on the internet. And then he said, few understand. And that's what started the few understand meme. And then a bunch of people started making fun of that because it's just a ridiculous metaphor because you can't actually build anything on that real estate. And no, it's not real estate. It's just tokens. It's just a token. It's not real estate. Anyways, you can actually build stuff on Ethereum. And so it is the same surface area like Bitcoin. Ethereum has the same surface area. But if we're using this real estate metaphor, like you can actually build stuff on your land on Ethereum. So I just enjoyed this metaphor.
Yeah, that's cool. You're literally building things on the blocks, the blocks themselves.
Exactly right.
What's this? This
was great. Okay, so this is a brand new PFP project that got spun up, and somebody kind of did an oopsies. If you want to click on that first image, the first one, yeah. We have this brand new Women's Doodle Society coming off of the success of Doodles NFT. And Women's Doodle Society tweeted out, something very special is coming soon. Please follow us and don't miss out, you know, implying they're going to start off their PFP NFT profile picture. And then somebody with an actual doodle says, yo, there's still a Fiverr watermark on your PFP. So like this Women Doodle Society just went to Fiverr and just like, yo, like, can you make us some NFT images?
And literally didn't even pay for it because it's still watermarked, right?
Exactly. Still watermarked. Also, the other thing about this is that this picture that we're looking at right here, somebody took a photograph of their screen, and you can tell because of like the striations right around the mouth. Like, dear, that is God, a picture of a screen. So I mean, that's not a screenshot. That is somebody with their phone taking a picture of their screen. So that person is a boomer. That is what a boomer looks like.
This is terrible. This is absolutely, like, you know, this, you know, late stage capitalism is mm-hmm. kind of that meme. This is like late stage meme market.
Yeah.
This is what happens. I mean, does this feel a little toppy to you?
Yeah, super. But like, I've been feeling top signals for roughly a year now. So I've started ignoring them.
Well, but I think we've come to a place where there can be top signals in various markets, right? But like not others. And mm-hmm. so maybe this is a top signal in like cloned PFP NFT segment of the market, right? Totally. But it doesn't mean that all NFTs have top signaled as a result of this.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Let's talk about this. A take from speaking someone of top on signals. Twitter. Yes. Another. This is late. If that was late stage NFT, this is late stage DeFi. And what happens mm-hmm. in late stage DeFi? I think this tweet is maybe summing up the current zeitgeist. Do you want to read this out?
Yeah, this is from Emilio, who says, the current state of the new wave of DeFi, he's talking about the newer DeFi apps that have come out about. One, individuals worshipped like gods. Two, burner addresses with keys controlled by the founders. Three, multi-million rugs shooken off like it was nothing. Four, DAO members doing whatever they want with the protocol treasuries. And then Emilio finishes up saying, needless to say, this is not what I signed up for. And I mean, Ryan and I are definitely DeFi boomers. We kind of stick to like the DeFi 1.0 apps, I'd say, like Maker, Compound, Aave, Uniswap, the things that came about while we were paying attention to Ethereum during the bear market. And there's just been like a newer wave of these DeFi apps, which are just like kind of not our vibe, I'd say. Just a little bit more like...
I would say... So for me personally, I would say some of them are, some of them aren't, right?
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
what this tweet summed up is individuals worshiped like gods, multi-million-dollar rugs, like people taking all of these excessive risks.
Right.
There is an element of some aspects of DeFi 2.0 that I totally don't vibe with, right?
Yeah.
What I love in DeFi 2.0 is seeing builders building new things. What I don't love is this whole vibe of like, you know, F everything, like we're just gonna build until it breaks mm-hmm. and do what we want with treasuries. And like that's a vibe that I definitely don't resonate with, and that's the part that feels late stage. I actually thought this reply from Mark kind of summed it up. We have the bull market and we have the bear market, he says. In between them we have cringe markets. When stuff like this is normal, Bear will clean it up.
Cringe markets. Wow, we have got to use that. I'm going to be using that moving forward. That's where we are. That's totally where I feel like we are right now. We are right in the middle of cringe market.
Are you wishing for a bear market then to clean some of this up, as Mark says?
Like, wishing for a bear market wishes for people's money to go down in a way, and I would never wish. I would never wish. But like, I also at the same time, like, if anyone who's listening to this feels like they're late into crypto, like, and you're like looking at your portfolio saying like, oh, please moon, please moon, please moon, you actually want a bear market. A bear market is where, like, if you have conviction, you stick around. You also buy assets at much lower prices. You learn who your friends are. Real products get built with real innovations. You also have time to understand these things before the market moves on. Like, bear markets are blessings.
It's a blessing.
A blessing. Yeah. Like, but then you're poor. So that sucks.
I too am bullish on bear markets because
I'm bullish on bear markets. Yeah.
You're poor temporarily. But mm-hmm. but the one thing, you know, I saw this thread in crypto Reddit. I think it was something like, are crypto markets going to come back? And the truth is some of them will and some of them won't.
Yeah.
So like you also have to be very cautious of what you're buying, what you're investing in. This is why we continuously harp on evaluation of like fundamentals, right? This stuff doesn't tend to, fundamentals don't tend to matter during bull runs, but in the bear market, they certainly do. Mm-hmm. I guess the safest move overall is just to escape to fiat for some period of time. But you know, that's what we're dealing with.
Fiat and hard money and yield.
Let's talk about this. The SEC, the good old SEC. This is my take. Do you want to read it out?
Yeah. This guy, Ryan Sean Adams, says, if the SEC deemed ETH a security in 2022, it would probably be the end of the SEC, not Ethereum, which is just like so Chad. Awesome.
It's a little cheeky. It's a little cheeky, right?
I loved it.
So here's the thing. I feel like institutions have the most to lose from a credibility perspective, right? And there was talk over the weekend that I saw of Gary Gensler, maybe the SEC coming out and saying something about Ethereum being a security, right? Like very heavy-handed move on the entire industry. And the reason I don't think they'll do this is because I legitimately believe that would be the beginning of the end for the SEC, right? That is such an erosion of the credibility of their institution. And let's remember, all of these government regulatory bodies, they are institutions. They are social institutions governed by the people, right? And if they start to lose their credibility in major ways, you know, like that's an existential threat for them. And to make this kind of a move to call ETH a security, which is why I'm not worried about it. I don't think they'll do this. They don't want to ruin their legitimacy and credibility, but like, it's just not going to happen. And if it did happen, Ethereum would come out of it more unscathed than the SEC right. on the other side of this thing. Like, Ethereum's not going away because a government body says it's a security.
Right. Yeah. And like, I dare them to try, first off. Also,
just I don't. They should just play nice. Just be nice, SEC. Yeah. Like, we could all help America. Like, just, you don't have to do this.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're doing it, but
no, they're definitely not. This is just like a conversation that
it's just a conversation on crypto Twitter.
It's just one of those things where like the emperor would be revealed to have no clothes, as in like, oh, you deemed Ethereum a security and like no one cares because and we're still doing all of our Ethereum stuff. Like do you think I would like to see if Coinbase would actually delist Ether from the exchange if they did that, or if they would leave it up as a protest? Like, I think
Ether's
it would show
a security,
how
then
little
everything
power
is.
Has.
Yeah, 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 everything true. Is right.
Well, Bitcoin has a case
I guess
where
just
it wouldn't
Bitcoin.
Be. Yeah.
This is your take, David.
Yeah, it's not really a take. It's me just kind of front running what I'm excited about. But I tweeted out, ETH Denver is 1 month away. I can already feel my heart getting warm. I'm just so happy to have ETH Denver around the corner. It's a great conference, great vibes. I'm just stoked to see everyone there.
Well, this goes into what you're excited about. So let me ask you, what are you excited about ETH Denver in particular? What's the pitch for someone to come to ETH Denver?
ETH Denver is just pure signal. If you are just fatigued from just the noise of a bull market or what we are now calling cringe market, like ETH Denver is the opposite of that. Like everyone who's at ETH Denver, like has like wants to be there for the right reasons. It's very deep crypto culture, very true to the ethos. It's just an absolute blast. It feels something like it's a hackathon. First off, there's a bunch of developers on their laptops like hacking away, and as like a non-dev, it's kind of nice just to like watch them be like, oh yeah, keep going guys, like keep building the stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service. And it's just like, it's a festival, it's a cultural festival of just like crypto culture, which is lovely. There's after parties, there's a bunch of like, you're gonna meet friends. If you want crypto friends and you don't, and you're talking the ear off of your family and your friends and they're tired of you, go to ETH Denver because you can find some other crypto people that can talk about crypto more than you can. And that's actually just one of the things I'm excited about, Ryan. The other thing I'm excited about is I did a layer zero with Santi Siri on Twitter. People might know him. Big Argentine community member, doesn't live in Argentina currently, but when Vitalik was going around Argentina recently and telling that story about how the Argentines are using Binance to transfer money, like that kind of story went around the Twitter sphere recently. It was Santi that was like with Vitalik, like, you know, guiding him around the country. It's like, hey, we're gonna go talk to these people. Like, we're gonna go, like, who do you want to go talk to? What part of the communities? And he's watched Argentina go from like a very wealthy, highly just like great country, like with lots of agriculture, and then the money broke, the inflation happened, the corruption in the government happened. He watched the downfall of Argentina, and he is now watching the rise of crypto society in Argentina.
Wow.
Where it's not like, you know, normal society that we consider normal inside the US, where you have like normal society and crypto people. Crypto people are society in Argentina. Like, it is completely just rampant as like a movement in Argentina. And I've always held Argentina close to my heart, just I think for reasons like that. Really
a lot
made
of great
me
people
go,
from Argentina too people, that I've yeah. met in crypto over the years.
Mm-hmm. Shout out Mariano Conti. So that I want everyone to go listen to the Layer Zero that comes out on Tuesday with Santiago Siri.
That's awesome, man. I can't wait to listen to it.
Yeah. Ryan, what are you excited about?
Look, it's this thing, Instagram doing NFTs. I think that's a massive deal. Like, we called it over the summer. You know, in August we wrote this post. Where we said Twitter is just the first. This is when Twitter announced that they were doing something with NFTs. They're just the first. You know what happens next? Competition among social media platforms will ramp up. YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. The metaverse will consume them all. This is the Web3 space race. and we're really seeing it happen. And what I'm blown away by is how fast this happened. Like, this is happening at warp speed, especially when you compare it to DeFi, right? So the incumbents, the groups that should feel threatened by this, they're jumping aboard. It's taken much longer for the incumbents in the finance world, like the banks of the world, to embrace DeFi. But in Web3, Web2 is just embracing it. They're just helping us roll out Web3. And that's amazing. And when I tweeted this out, some people were saying, well, but, you know, Facebook's the enemy, right? Meta, Instagram, this is the enemy. But we always go back to that thing of, if they adopt crypto protocols, they adopt crypto values,
oh,
right?
Oh, that line gives me shivers.
Right? That's how we win. So this is an example of crypto winning. Now, other people said, okay, but what if Facebook is not actually using an open permissionless chain? What if they're using their own layer one? Or I just say, like, let them, yeah. Okay? I mean, that's fine. You can be AOL. You can mail CDs to everyone's house and onboard them to the fake internet so that they eventually onboard to the real internet, right? That's what's going to happen, because they can't persist in a closed ecosystem. I'm very bullish on the protocol sync thesis that ultimately all of this value, all of the people that Web2 onboards will come into the real Web3 economy in the world. And they won't stop at property rights owned by Facebook. You know, they won't settle for that. They want real property rights that they own on a public, permissionless, open system like Ethereum. So I'm excited about that. Like, this is Trojan horse stuff. Crypto's winning. And this is exactly mm-hmm. how we win. Super bullish.
Yeah, I feel like crypto's already won. It's just we're waiting for the rest of the world to realize it.
I think so. Yeah. Speaking of which, meme of the week, you ready?
Here we go.
Time for
we got two this week. We got
meme
two memes of the week. They're both fantastic.
Right. What's the first one? Explain this.
All right. So for the viewers, we have the Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, duck season, rabbit season meme, except it's alt season or L2 season. Like, what's it going to be? Is it all L1 season or is it layer 2 season? I know where I've placed my bets. I think listeners wouldn't need me to say that, but alt layer 1 or layer 2?
Is this also a comment about narrative rotation, though, too? Because we see a well-known trader in this meme, right? And so, like, you can kind of rotate from L1 season to L2 season. And I think this is implying that L2 season is next from a narrative perspective.
Yeah. Not to be mean, but I'd like to know if Three Arrows Capital invested in either Arbitrum or Optimism. I don't think they did. And so, therefore, they are on the alt layer one season camp.
I think they've got some Starkware, though.
They do have Starkware.
So there's that. What's the second meme?
All right. here's where I think my bets are. So this is we talked about this meme actually forever ago, but I just saw this meme. I was like, wow, this is so great. This is a Pepe Frog character being childish, hopping from couch A to couch B because the floor is lava. But couch A is Optimism and couch B is Arbitrum and the floor is Ethereum, the Ethereum mainnet. He's hopping from Optimism to Arbitrum. Don't touch mainnet because the mainnet's lava. And then there's somebody saying, Billy, have you been wormholing again? Implying, you know, they're taking a bridge. They're using Kinext or using Hop to go from layer one to layer two, or excuse me, from layer two to layer two. And so I thought this was a cute meme.
Look, I think that's a theme for 2021, and L2 22 is the floor is lava. Main chain is lava.
Main chain's lava.
Get on L2, migrate while you have a chance, when you have the chance. Mm-hmm. I think that's it. Meme of the week. We covered everything on the roll up, guys. As always, Bitcoin is risky. So is ETH. So is DeFi. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed the video. If you did, head over to Bankless HQ right now to develop your crypto investing skills and learn how to free yourself from banks and gain your financial independence. We recommend joining our daily newsletter, podcast, and community as a Bankless Premium subscriber to get the most out of your Bankless experience. You'll get access to our market analysis, our alpha leaks, and exclusive content, and even the Bankless token for airdrops, raffles, and unlocks. If you're interested in crypto, the Bankless community is where you want to be. Click the link in the description to become a Bankless Premium subscriber today. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the channel for in-depth interviews with industry leaders, Ask Me Anythings, and weekly roll-ups where we summarize the week in crypto and other fantastic content. Thanks everyone for watching and being on the journey as we build out the Bankless Nation.